are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina, and I am your host, and I want to thank you for tuning in, as always, to the podcast. On today's show, I'm going to play for you a rather long interview I did with Tim May. He is a longtime beat writer, Ohio State beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. So he agreed to come onto the program and break down for me some of the Ohio State prospects, including Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback, Bosa, the tackles that they have coming out in the draft, and just basically give me a rundown of all of the prospects and what they bring to the table and what they, you know, where they need to take the biggest leap and so forth. So it's a really good interview. I'm going to play that for you in just a minute. Before we do that, I do want to cover a couple of housekeeping notes and also get you caught up on some of the latest news. First off, for those who haven't heard, the Giants had a minor roster transaction. They re-signed tight end Scott Simonson to a one-year deal. Financial terms were not disclosed, but I have a gut feeling it's probably for the veteran minimum. Simonson last year was the only one of the three tight ends on the Giants roster to play in all 16 games, and he started to come on well as a blocker and as a receiver there towards the end of the year. And it's going to be interesting because I have long been of the opinion that if the Giants brought back Simonson, they might look to either reduce Rhett Ellison's number or maybe move him even off the roster. And the reason why I say that is because the tight end class in this year's draft is probably one of the best classes they've had in quite some time. So I would not be shocked at all if the Giants go ahead and, you know, move on from Rhett Ellison, who right now his cap figure is way higher than Evan Ingram's, who, you know, Evan Ingram, of course, being the number one tight end on the roster. And right now they just need to come up with some kind of a balance for that to make everything fall into line more. In other news, on Tuesday, the official tagging season opened up. That was the first day of a two-week window for NFL teams to place the franchise or transition tag on players, on one player, like upcoming unrestricted free agent who they probably want to keep, but who is expected to get a lot of attention in the open market. Now, the Giants, their best candidate for one of the tags, transition or franchise, is obviously safety Landon Collins. No decision, as I record this, no decision has been made. And that is probably because, you know, it's still early and, you know, the Giants could still conceivably open up negotiations with Landon Collins and see if they can't get to a long-term deal before they have to close out the tag window. What I believe the Giants will end up doing if they can't come to a long-term deal with Landon Collins, I could see them using the transition tag. And basically the transition tag is a way to retain a certain degree of rights to the player. If the player goes out and signs a offer sheet with another team, the Giants would then have 5 days to match it. Otherwise, the transition tag carries about $2 million less than the franchise tag. So basically, the amount of the transition tag is, I want to say, the average of the top 10 highest paid players at that position. So you're talking pretty much like a restricted free agent type of deal, like a second round tender or something like that. So so that's where we stand right now as of this recording. Again, I'm recording this on Tuesday. So, you know, if by the time this podcast airs, things have changed, obviously, you know, I will update you as best as I can. All right. Also, before we get into the interview with Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch about the Ohio State prospects, just a couple quick housekeeping notes. I'm going to have one more show for you this week. That's going to be tomorrow. And I haven't finalized it yet, but pretty much it's going to center around my ideas on what the Giants should do with the cap and in free agency. So I'm going to put together a little plan of sorts and kind of present it to you. And, you know, we'll take questions, we'll take comments. If, you know, with Twitter Tuesday coming up next week, if you have comments, questions on the plan, by all means, you guys know what to do. Send them to lockedongiantspodcast@gmail.com or tweet them to me at Patricia_Trainer with the hashtag AskPTrain. There won't be a show Friday. We won't have a show on next Monday. Now, Tuesday, we'll have our weekly Twitter Tuesday program. So again, get your questions in. You know, the sooner you get them in, the better, because I do record the show the day before. So try and get those into me by Monday morning. Then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I will have shows because we will be at the Combine. I will be at the Combine, so I will have shows. I'll try and get you some interviews with the players. I'll try and give you, you know, anything I happen to come across as far as, you know, rumors, news, and what have you. So it's going to be a very busy week next week, and hopefully you'll enjoy all the content. I'll see if I can grab a couple of guests. You know, I'll have the whole NFL community will basically be at the Indiana Convention Center. And if I can grab a couple of guests to come on the program with me, I will certainly look to do that and incorporate them into the shows. All right, so we're going to take a short break. And when I come back, I'm going to play part one of the two-part interview I did with Tim May, the longtime beat writer of the Columbus Dispatch. So stay with us and we'll be right back. Welcome, New York Giant fans, to Locked On Giants and my interview with Tim May. He is with the Columbus Dispatch. He's covered Ohio State University football since 1984. So who better to come on the program to talk about some of the Ohio State Buckeye prospects in the draft? And Tim, welcome to the program. Really glad to have you.
Patricia, I'm glad to be here. Hope I can help you.
Oh, I appreciate you. All right. So, Tim, we've got to get started with the quarterback. Everybody's talking about Dwayne Haskins and the Giants and how he might be a fit. Can you give us a little overview from your observations and your dealings with Haskins, what type of player he is, what type of person he is?
Number one, he's a great guy to deal with. I mean, I know you hear that from a lot of people, but this guy's intelligent. He's confident without a doubt. And he's respectful too. I mean, he's a quick learner, all those kind of things. But then on top of that, you know, you can have all that, but have a guy who's a mediocre talent. This guy is the best passing quarterback I've covered at Ohio State, and one of the best passing quarterbacks I've ever seen. I mean, I'm going on 65 years old right now, and I've seen a lot of guys play live from Joe Namath on up through. And I mean, this guy ranks right up there in terms. What I call the dart thrower. I mean, he can throw every pass you want him to throw, but he's extremely accurate, hitting people on the move, which I think is vital for any kind of giddy-up offense in college football, but definitely in the NFL. And, you know, contrary to at least one opinion maker's beliefs, he is not a runner. He is a passer, and he will run if he has to, but he is a passer par excellence.
And what about, you know, where he can still grow? Because, you know, the big knock on him from some people is that he's only had the one full season of starting experience. And, you know, there are some people who prescribe to the old Bill Parcells theory where, you know, a guy has to have at least 3 years of experience. Where can Haskins still get better in his game?
Well, you know, I don't subscribe to that theory anymore, because modern football says if you're pretty good, you need to parlay right now and get on with, if you want to be an NFL quarterback, get on with it. And, you know, Mitch Trubisky, for example, was only a one-year starter at North Carolina before the Bears made him their pick. And without a doubt, any quarterback benefits from more repetitions and more exposure to reading defenses, et cetera. You could see him literally improve right in front of your eyes as the season wore on in 2018. I'm talking about Dwayne Haskins Jr. And like I was saying earlier, he's extremely intelligent. so he picks up on things rapidly. But he's been studying the art of playing quarterback pretty much his entire life, and the poise it takes, and the really the responsibility to deliver the ball on time and accurately, and to throw receivers open, et cetera. And that's where I think he really excelled this year and took Ohio State's offense to another level. You know, people have to understand, he had by far the greatest passing season in Big Ten history, which of course includes Ohio State. He threw more touchdown passes than any quarterback in Big Ten history with 50. You know, one of those records was breaking a record of a guy by the name of Drew Brees. So I guess my point is he just gets better with reps and with exposure. But, you know, how many quarterbacks go in the NFL and start immediately? I mean, this isn't like going from college basketball to the NBA. Most quarterbacks learn on the job, or they sit and learn. So, I think if a guy's a big-time talent, the sooner you get him into your system and mold him in your system, the better off you are.
What do you think is his biggest transition that he's going to have to make once he does get to the NFL?
The same thing that all quarterbacks face in that jump is not the speed of the game. I guess it is the speed of the game when you consider the speed of the defenders you're going against, how windows don't open and close as slowly sometimes as they do in college football. You know, in college football, when you're going against defenses, a defense might have one or two really great defensive backs. I'm talking about even at Alabama. But this unlikely they have four or five back there that you're going against to disguise things, et cetera, and, in man coverage to bait you into throws and those kind of things. But in the NFL, it's more about just the overall speed you're facing on the other side and the way teams are scheming you to try to throw to bait you into throwing places. That's the toughest thing, I think, for a quarterback to make in the transition. Because the bottom line is when you get drafted to the NFL, even though some NFL teams are incorporating the run-pass option and getting the quarterbacks involved in the running game a little bit also, like Baltimore now with Lamar Jackson, bottom line is you're mainly paid to stand there and deliver the ball and deliver it on time and or throw receivers open. And I think the throw receivers open thing, do not – discount that at all. That's where Dwayne Haskins Jr. excels. He sees a little more of the field than the average quarterback, which I think benefits you in the long run.
Now, one of the knocks, though, on him has always been that he doesn't go through all his progressions. I mean, some people will say that that's going to hurt him in the NFL. Some people say it won't matter. What do you see from him in that regard?
I think that's nitpicking on a guy because he threw very few interceptions this year. Number one, number two, in college football, most of the time you don't have to go through progressions because the play is schemed and designed to get a guy open. With that said, I thought he excelled at when things broke down with the primary read about finding another guy. You know, one I really liked was in the Rose Bowl when he looked off and then came back to the middle and Paris Campbell was wide open in the middle of the end zone. And another one was a throw he made to beat the safety before the safety could close to Johnny Dixon in that game against what people said was the best defensive secondary in the country in Washington's defense. So I think that's I know it sounds like I'm high on this guy. I am very high on this guy. This guy is a rare talent, and I think between now and the draft, the nitpicking The nitpicking will go on because that's what the analysts do to try to figure out why one guy's better than the other. But you look at his stats compared to Tua Tagovailoa and Kyler Murray, the two other finalists for the Heisman Trophy. Kyler Murray, of course, won it. Dwayne Haskins Jr. had better overall stats than those guys. So there you go.
All right. And does he fit into a specific scheme, do you think, better than maybe, or some of the others? Or can he just basically step in with any scheme and just function at a high enough level?
Yeah, I think most schemes and teams come back to the same thing, which is quarterback standing in a certain spot and delivering the ball, but also showing the ability to evade the rush. The thing about Dwayne is he's 6'3", 6'4". I think in the 220, 225 range, he's a big guy already. And, in scheme, the guys who really make the difference in the NFL at the NFL level are guys who can keep plays alive and pretty much go to what I call the secondary play. Forget about the secondary read, but the secondary play, like Ben Roethlisberger, is not considered one of the great scramblers of all time, but he's one of the great eluders evaders of the pass rush and keeping plays alive by shrugging. I mean, there are all kinds of different ways to skin the cat. I think Dwayne Haskins Jr. has the ability to scramble a little bit. He also has the ability to he seemed to, as the year went on, especially for Ohio State, seemed to pick up pressure and kind of get away from it. So I think that's the most important one of the more important factors I see for an NFL quarterback.
And then what's something about Dwayne Haskins Jr. that not a lot of people are talking about, giving him credit for, but, you know, his next NFL team and their fan base really should know?
Well, Urban Meyer is a spread zone read option coach, meaning Ohio State was about running the ball more often than it threw it, you know, and so were his other teams at like Florida and Utah and Bowling Green. Well, this guy was good enough as a passing quarterback to make them, they didn't change their offense, but it made them feature the passing game much more. Anybody who watched Ohio State this past year saw that. And I think that's what Dwayne Haskins Jr. brings to the fore. Like you were talking about earlier in the program here, you've only seen him as a starter one time. But you know what? The previous time you saw him, he was thrust into the toughest of circumstances for an Ohio State quarterback, the Michigan game in 2017 when JT Barrett got hurt. And he came in cold off the bench, and he delivered a great clutch third down pass followed by a tremendous scramble down to near the goal line for the drive that really got Ohio State going. It was trailing when he entered the game, and he got them going and rallied them to victory over their arch rival, Michigan. And, you know, to me, that shows moxie as much as anything else, the ability to do whatever it takes to keep a drive alive and to, pardon the expression, but to keep hope alive.
And there have been some hints on social media, on Dwayne Haskins' social media, that he seems to be interested in coming to the Giants. Has he indicated that, or are you getting a feel for, you know, if he had his druthers, where he would want to go?
You know, I think being the number one toad in New York City or for New York is, and especially if it's on a team that's improving, if you sense that it's improving, I think that's the be all and end all. I mean, I grew up, I saw Joe Namath play live at Alabama when I was a little kid, and saw him just capture that city, you know, when he went from Alabama to the NFL to the New York Jets. I didn't mean to use that four-letter word in front of you there, the Jets. But the bottom line is, I think he would relish that. You know, he grew up, he was born and raised early in the New Jersey area, and then moved to the Washington D.C. area. His parents, his dad especially, was keen on him evolving and improving as a quarterback, and so he moved him down there to play at a private school there, the Bullis School, which really benefited him. But I think. You know, anybody that saw him while he was there for the Heisman ceremonies and build up in New York City knows. I don't think he's intimidated by that environment.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because the New York environment can be very unforgiving sometimes. One day you're the hero, the next day you're the GOAT, and I don't mean greatest of all time. So I was going to ask you, you know, despite the fact that he's still young, he's what, 20, 21?
Yeah.
How old is he? Yeah, so he's still young. He's still, you know, he hasn't fully matured yet. He's on his way. I mean, what do you think? How do you think he would handle that? You know, because it does take some getting used to playing in this market.
Well, if I remind people about the New York Giants, they actually, you know, they actually work in New Jersey, or at least that's where they play. You know,
it's part of the tri-state area, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, you could live in New Jersey. You don't have to live in downtown Manhattan to play for the like Joe Willie Namath did. You know, you can live out, you know, a lot of places you can live there. Number two, you know, they get into a cocoon a little bit. I mean, some guys read all the stuff, some guys don't. You know that. And, you know, I think Dwayne keeps up with what people say about him and read and write about him. At least he has in college. I think he's intrigued by it. I think he's intrigued by proving people wrong and stuff. But let's don't discount this at all. There will be a learning curve for him. There's a learning curve. You know, look at John Elway. Look how long it took him to win a Super Bowl. Then he won two in a row. And there's a learning curve for any young quarterback going into the league. But, you know, as far as scrutiny goes, there are a few college football programs that scrutinize you from a media standpoint and from a dealing with microphones in your face standpoint. You know, you can go Google some photos of him being interviewed by us here at Ohio State, et cetera. The pressure you face from a day-to-day standpoint of delivering for one of the great programs in the country, where one loss really, you know, people take it extremely hard. I mean, people are going to have a hard time getting over that Purdue loss this year by Ohio State, 49-20 at Purdue. Yet I remind people that also that Dwayne set school records for attempts, completions, and at that moment, passing yardage in a single game for Ohio State in that game, but they weren't able to pull it out. And he stood up to the microphones the next week and answered questions, et cetera. So, I mean, he's had a little bit of a taste of it. I think Ohio State's one of the few places that gives an athlete a little bit of what he's going to face in the National Football League from the standpoint of scrutiny and media pressure.
You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina, special guest Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking Ohio State draft prospects. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more of the Ohio State draft prospects not named Dwayne Haskins, so stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and Tim May, who's my special guest from the Columbus Dispatch. He's covered Ohio State football since 1984, does a really good job. One of the old school reporters. There's not a whole lot of us out there remaining in the business, but, you know, it's interesting, Tim, because, you know, when you've been on a beat for as long as you have, you certainly get a nice sample size of different players, different styles, you know, who does what. You get to see how the game has evolved. And I want to turn the attention now to the tackles, the offensive tackles, Mike Jordan, Isaiah Prince. They are both in the draft this year. You know, one of the big knocks in general on offensive linemen is that colleges just don't run the programs that, you know, that get these guys ready for the pros, and therefore their learning curve is a little longer when they get to the NFL. When you look at the skill set that Jordan and Prince bring to the game, what kind of transition are they looking at?
It's funny because it's like, Patricia, it's like we were talking about with Dwayne Haskins Jr., the speed of the game is the biggest transition for any player from high school to college, and then from high school to major college, and then major college to the NFL. And they'll be dealing with that. They'll be dealing with schemes that are set up to take advantage of their weaknesses, et cetera. You know, with that said, Michael Jordan, we'll start off with him. He's 6'6", 6'7", well over 300 pounds. And the interesting thing about him being projected as a possible tackle is he didn't play tackle in college. He played guard for 2 years and then center. He became the first freshman offensive lineman at Ohio State to start every game his freshman year. And I don't mean redshirt freshman. I mean pure freshman year since a guy named Orlando Pace. And I know people remember him. But, I wouldn't necessarily it would be a hazard to compare him to Orlando Pace, because Orlando Pace, in my opinion, is the greatest offensive lineman I ever saw and ever covered. But with that said, Michael Jordan showed a lot of flexibility to play guard and then center. He stepped into center this year and showed – there's his flexibility, because now people are projecting him as a possible tackle mainly because of how big he is. But I think he's one of these kids who's very intelligent, takes everything seriously from the standpoint of playing the game, and he's like a sponge. He's always looking to learn. And, you know, he was an All-American on at least one team, an All-Big Ten, et cetera, following in the shoes of before him of Pat Elflein, who started before, you know, after playing guard a couple of years and then moved to center, won the Remington Trophy, and then Billy Price did the same thing, moved to guard in 2017 after playing guard after center in 2017, after playing guard his whole career, previous career at Ohio State, and then also won the Remington. So this kid, you know, drew raves as the season went along. Yeah, he had a couple of, you know, a couple, three or four little bad snaps, I don't know, low snaps, et cetera, to Dwayne Haskins Jr. on occasion, because Ohio State operated almost exclusively out of the shotgun. But the bottom line is, I think the flexibility and the intelligence that Michael Jordan has, coupled with obvious physical ability, will take him a long way. You know, with Isaiah Prince, the interesting thing about him is you still keep figuring his best football is ahead of him. He had the occasional propensity to for illegal procedure, illegal movement that you know, got him some criticism while he was at Ohio State. But if you ever look at him, you just see he exudes potential. Whether they've gotten all of it, whether he's realized that, you know, is up to someone else's conjecture. I don't believe he has, but I believe he has it in him. And he has great feet, which is what you're always looking for from a tackle in the National Football League. And, you know, I think his best football is ahead of him, pardon the expression, but that is a truth.
What type of blocking scheme did they run at Ohio State there? Were they more of an inside zone or power blocking, or did they run like a combination?
They would run combination. I mean, they ran run pass option, RPO, quite a bit at the beginning of this past season, and it didn't really mesh with what they had going on in the offensive line, and teams were kind of jumping things, and or the offensive linemen were a little bit reticent or reluctant, but to get downfield. Because with Dwayne Haskins Jr., a lot of times the RPO turned into a pass, you know, not a run. Because, you know, when you got the ball in your hand, you're going to do what you do best. With Dwayne Haskins Jr., it was the pass. But they kind of settled down as the year went along and produced another 1,000-yard rusher in J.K. Dobbins. And, you know, some people were critical of this offensive line's play this year. All I pointed out was all they did was anchor the most prolific offense in Ohio State history. From an average yards per game standpoint, and I think that says a lot. Number two, like you said, they were a lot of zone, but, you know, the pros run a lot of zone now, et cetera. Michael Jordan has shown the ability to pull and lead on overplays and things like that. So I think they benefited from sort of a wide-ranging approach. But every lineman going from the, you know, name me one college that's, I don't know, maybe Alabama, even Alabama's gotten away from that too, who runs what you call a classic pro-style offense. I'm not sure there is a classic pro-style offense, to be honest with you, anymore.
No, it's actually, you know, we've seen it. It mixes up. It's like, you know, there's not such thing as a pure West Coast offense either, I don't think, anymore.
Correct. It's a mishmash.
Yes.
Like when Bear Bryant adopted the wishbone in Alabama in the 1970s, but added the potent air attack on top of it. You know, coaches are always robbing Peter to pay Paul, and adding their own little flourish.
Definitely. I want to look at the defensive side of the ball, because you have a defensive lineman, Draymond Jones, who's a
Draymond
junior. Draymond Jones. Sorry about that. And what do you see from him? I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of draft analysts that I speak with, they say that this is a really deep and rich class for defensive line help, defensive talent. What kind of player is Jones?
He was a defensive end when he showed up at Ohio State, 4 years ago, and had played basketball, was a pretty good basketball player. He, in essence, moved down to defensive tackle a couple of years ago because he wanted to play more, and they had a need there at defensive tackle. You know, when you had the Boses in a row, et cetera, at defensive end, things get a little crowded. But what he brings to the fore there at defensive tackle is a defensive end's quickness and a defensive end's ability to shed blocking and get up through the gap, and that's where he excelled, in my opinion. He's not a classic what I call A-gap stuffer, because he doesn't have that size, but he has great size, in my opinion, for a guy who can get upfield and basically shoot the gap, you know, a B-gap or whatever, and create havoc from the standpoint of what's he doing back here. So that's what he brings to the fore more than anything else, and he has a great desire to play the game. And I know all these guys do probably, but he definitely does. And kind of he likes it when people question him, question his ability, et cetera. He usually steps it up a notch. He seemed to play better, too. I mean, he was really good all through his career, but he seemed to play better in the big games, too, though. That's where he became a factor. And that's what I see in Draymond. I just see a guy who's big-time football's ahead of him.
So he's more of a penetrator, or like a, I guess in the terms of a 3-4, I'm sorry, a 4-3 defense, like a 3-tech type of player?
Exactly. I think he's a guy that, you know, the NFL now, you know this, they're more about pressing the attack as much as they are playing catch. I mean, the days of of defensive linemen necessarily standing there and holding their ground are almost gone. And the other thing is, I think he has the ability to be a two-gap, I mean, a two-tech, make defenders have to possibly use a guard and a center on him or a guard and a tackle to basically cover the gap. And I think that frees other guys up. I think he has that ability because he has that great first step.
Now, I'm reluctant, staying on the defensive side of the ball, I'm reluctant to bring up Nick Bosa because I don't think he's going to last to number 6 for the Giants to grab him. But we have to talk about him. We can't leave him out. Obviously considered one of the top prospects in the draft, regardless of position, projected to be possibly the number 1 overall pick. Mm-hmm. What kind of a player is Bosa?
Until he suffered that core muscle injury against TCU the third game of the year, he was off to a fantastic start. It basically was coming to fruition, everything that he'd worked on his previous 19, 20 years as a person. And it's too bad because when Ohio State lost him, they lost maybe the best defensive player in the country, not defensive lineman, maybe the best defensive player. He had that kind of impact, and it took Ohio State's defense a long time. I'm not sure it ever did quite recover from that. But the thing about Nick Bosa is he's not a carbon copy of his brother Joey, who was, what, the third guy taken in the 2016 draft at defensive end by the Chargers. But he's a facsimile, I mean, from the standpoint of he has a lot of Joey's traits. And then he also, in my opinion, is maybe a better inside player if you have to use him on the inside, like in a 3-4 or something like that, a little better inside player than maybe his brother was. But what stands out about both of them is the use of their hands, which is the anybody will tell you that who watches them. They have great get-off techniques. I mean, he works on his get-off. I mean, anytime you ever ask Nick Bosa where can you get better, he always says his get-off. And that incorporates a lot of things. But then his get-off combined with his hand usage, and then the fact that his brute strength makes him the reason guys are drooling trying to get the second Bosa, you know, on their side. And I think that's where he stands out more than anything else. But he is coming off that injury and the surgery that followed that basically ended his junior season at Ohio State. So much so that he opted, he and his dad opted for him to leave school and move out and move in with his brother out on the West Coast in the Southern California area back in late October, and just so he could concentrate on his rehab and also getting ready for the combine, where he hopes to display his wares. If he doesn't do that, he'd probably do it maybe later at the Ohio State Pro Day. But I mean, I think most people think he has all the skill. Now they want to see if he's fully recovered from his injury.
Now, as we know, and I tell people this all the time, the way we see draft prospects isn't necessarily the way the NFL community sees them. There's always going to be a surprise where, for example, a guy that we might have projected to be a top 10 pick will fall in the draft. If you had to take a guess, what kind of a surprise do you think we might see regarding the Ohio State prospects, whether it be somebody who maybe is rated a little higher than, you know, what he might actually be, or somebody who's not getting enough credit and will probably go higher than where the analysts are projecting?
Well, I've been, like you pointed out earlier, I've been covering Ohio State football since 84. I covered the Browns and the Bengals before that, back in the late 70s, early 80s. And some things never change, Patricia. That is the fact that NFL scouts and coaches get really fired up come draft time on potential, because they think if the guy's got the wherewithal, they can turn him into a star, you know, or at least make him into their own image. With that in mind, Paris Campbell has something that few other people in the draft have, and that is just raw speed. And he coupled that this year, this past season, by sticking around, becoming a captain, but also by sticking around, becoming a complete receiver. Finally, a guy who shows he can go up and get the ball, judge deep passes a lot better. And he came out of high school as a 17-year-old running back who they converted to their hybrid back position at Ohio State. And he took it to another level this year. Speed is something you don't ever discount speed and the premium that the NFL scouts and coaches put on it. So there's a guy I think you can keep your eye on as a possible surprise early pick. Another one, maybe not real early pick, but who's going to get drafted, I think, higher than most people thought 2 years ago he would, is Terry McLaurin, another of the three amigos. I call them the three amigos, the receivers they had this year, fifth-year seniors, because anybody who watched the Senior Bowl shows what this guy brings to the game. He brings, sound like a coach here, he brings desire, competitiveness, but also some great ability. But, he was as good a receiver as he was even better as a special teams guy, in covering kicks, et cetera, and making things happen on special teams. And the pros love those kind of players, I saw him projected as a possible draft in the second or third round by New England. Well, that makes a lot of sense when you consider that he could also be a decent receiver for you, but bring some stable influence to the, and an inspiring influence really to your special teams with the way he plays that part of it. And then Johnny Dixon, the other of the three amigos, the receivers. All he did was catch touchdown passes. That's almost the case with him. But he dealt with some chronic knee problems early in his career, got over those, and became one of the more big play receivers you'll ever see at Ohio State the last couple of seasons, especially under Dwayne Haskins Jr. While he was throwing the ball to him. So those are three guys, I think, that could surprise some people because they're mature, they stuck around, and they all have some innate ability that make them different, I think, from some of your average Joes.
All right. That sounds great, Tim. Really good overview of the Ohio State Buckeye draft prospects. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media and find your work.
Yeah, I'm at Tim_MaySports on Twitter. And I've been at dispatch.com for most of my life. I'm retiring at the moment, but I'm still keeping up with things, et cetera, because you never know when somebody like you is going to call me and ask me questions, right? But by the way, another name to keep in mind is Kendall Sheffield. He didn't have a great college career as a cornerback. He was originally signed by Alabama, transferred from there to Blinn Junior College, and then transferred to Ohio State, where he played the last 2 years. But he will run a fantastic 40-yard dash, and that will get – the scouts' attention, and he is basically still sort of clay to be molded as a cornerback and or safety defensive back prospect. But there's another name to keep your eye on, Patricia. I didn't mean to add that along with my own bio.
Oh, that's okay. No, I mean, I have a list here of the combine participants, and I'm sure there are other guys that are going to be, that are in the draft from Ohio State, but they only gave us right now the combine guys, and I'm still trying to gather all the information and sort everything out. So every little tidbit helps, definitely.
And Mike Weber, running back, he is a guy who could be a good utility running back in the National Football League. I'm not sure anybody's projecting him among the elite running backs, but he's a guy who's left early, but has, you know, had a 1,000-yard season a couple of years ago, and he was, in my opinion, the real spark plug that got Ohio State's offense going in the Rose Bowl against Washington's defense. So there's another name to keep an eye on who the Giants might want to pluck, you know, as a Saquon Barkley backup or something.
All right. So it looks like there's something for everybody here from the Ohio State Buckeye team. Tim, really appreciate your insight. Congratulations on your retirement and a long, successful career. It's very rare nowadays in the newspaper writing business, but you obviously have been doing something right all these years to last as long as you have.
Yeah, sometimes you fool them, you know what I mean? That's the thing, Patricia. Sometimes you just fool them. But, hey, I enjoyed being on here with you.
I appreciate it. All right, that's Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch. Giant fans, thank you so much for tuning in.